It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today joining us in our Des Moines studio, Rachel Caulfield, Associate Professor in Drake's Department of Political Science. Great to have you back, Rachel.
Thanks, Ben. Good to be here.
Justin Holmes in our Cedar Falls studio, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Justin, it's been a while, but great to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, let's get right to it. Plenty of politics to talk about this week. In fact, you have to weed out what the worthy things you can't talk about for lack of time. But, of course, within the last 24 hours, this story blowing up about Donald Trump's latest controversial comment, his campaign responding to accusations that the candidate encouraged Second Amendment people to commit violence against Hillary Clinton during a rally held yesterday. The Donald Trump team says that the notion that Trump was suggesting violence is ridiculous and that he was referring to voting instead. Let's listen to what Donald Trump said that was so controversial yesterday.
If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, that will be a horrible day.
Okay. Let's... Before we answer the question, if this is a harmless joke or is this liberal media spinning it into a bigger thing than it really is, let's remind ourselves of the kind of comments that Donald Trump has made at campaign rallies in the past.
We're not allowed to punch back anymore. I love the old days. You know what they used to do to guys like that when they were in a place like this? They'd be carried out on a stretcher, folks. I'd have to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
Yeah, get him out. Try not to hurt him. If you do, I'll defend you in court. Don't worry about it.
Do whatever you have to do to him. I don't care. And you know what? I think I'm totally within my rights to say that.
Knock the crap out of him, would you? Seriously.
I was going to hit a number of those speakers so hard, their heads would spin. They'd never recover.
Just knock the hell. I promise you, I will pay for the legal fees. I promise.
Okay, many interpreted Donald Trump's comments yesterday as a threat to Hillary Clinton. Is that a reasonable assertion, Justin Holmes?
I think so. Listening to sort of the various defenses that have come out afterwards, they're just sort of incoherent mostly. The way that the phrasing is laid out really seems to be predicated on the notion that it's post-election. There is a lot of ambiguity in the statement, and of course I don't know what's going on in his head, but certainly it's a pretty reasonable interpretation of it. It's a little tricky as well because when Trump goes off script like this, his syntax just gets to be so bizarre, I can't even begin to diagram that sentence. So knowing exactly what refers where is a little tricky, but gosh, it at least implies, I think, a threat of violence.
Mm-hmm. Rachel Caulfield, where do you come down on this? A harmless joke, liberal media spinning it, or a real threat?
Well, this has been a habit with Donald Trump, right? And this bravado on the campaign trail. And it's one of the reasons that people really like him, because it seems strong and he has a clear point of view and he's going to go out there. I would agree completely. There's so much ambiguity in the way that he says things whenever he departs from prepared remarks. But this is one of the things that people, his supporters, really like about him. If you try to follow the sentence and you treat it as a legitimate statement, then it does seem clear that he's, there's some assumption that this is post-election,
in which case the lobby of Second Amendment people wouldn't be doing much good.
Much voting, voting
be,
is done.
Voting is done, right.
So how the Second Amendment people would take care of this is unclear, is left unclear. But, he also has a habit when he gets himself into trouble with sloppy language on the campaign trail and these sorts of controversies, he comes back with, gosh, this is just a joke, right? Why do we have to be so politically correct?
That's a basis of his campaign.
Exactly.
People,
mm-hmm.
Listen, this is the way real people talk. They don't mean it and don't get so uptight.
Yeah. And everybody's overreacting. So, I think on both sides, you have basically the entire tenor of the campaign again represented in this little kerfuffle on this particular remark.
Well, bad news for Donald Trump. Besides the poll numbers, we'll talk about those dramatically changing within the last few days. not in favor of Donald Trump, but also key Republicans pulling their support from Donald Trump. One of the biggest, Maine's Republican Senator Susan Collins. Here she is. She pulled her support for Donald Trump this week, but here she is responding to Donald Trump's comment on Hillary Clinton that we just heard on Hillary Clinton and Second Amendment supporters.
Donald Trump has such a history of making remarks that denigrate people, that mock the vulnerable, that are so inappropriate for a presidential candidate. And thus, when he makes a remark like this, which I interpreted as not in any way inciting violence, people leap to the conclusion that he's trying to send some sort of message. So in many ways, even though I don't think it was intended in any way to be inciting violence, Donald Trump has himself to blame for the fact that people leap to that conclusion. It is because he has had this constant stream of attacks on people that people assume the worst.
Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins, she stated she will not be voting for Trump. She said she's not supporting Hillary Clinton either, but she said that she believes Trump could make the world, in her words, more dangerous and that his values represent a threat to the Republican Party. I wonder if Justin, if you think we've reached sort of a turning point when we consider the polls. We'll go into them in depth in a little bit later here, but this wave of Republicans pulling support from Trump.
I think it is a potential serious problem for him. You know, on the one hand, part of his appeal is I'm an outsider. I stand up to the establishment. You know, that's been his response to a lot of these things as well. They're just the establishment, and that's not what you want anyway. But if you dig down in the polling a little bit, one of the places that Trump is really suffering, especially compared to Clinton, is that there are a lot of Republican identifiers that are dissenting from him. And to the degree that they are getting cues from other Republican elites, that sort of legitimizes that position, makes it easier for them to not come back around on Election Day. And also, if there are people that are wavering, because I think there are some people that are sort of tepidly supporting him as well, that may peel off, you know, even more of those voters.
Okay, we want to reach out to our listeners this hour and ask, because we want to talk about that as well, the so-called down-ticket influence of Donald Trump that a lot of Republican congressional members are worried about. So let's ask you, has Donald Trump's candidacy influenced which party you'll vote for in Iowa's congressional races, the one Senate race and the four House of Representatives races? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Speaking yesterday on a conference call with reporters, Senator Chuck Grassley said his schedule has prevented him from attending any of the three rallies GOP nominee Donald Trump has held in Iowa since the Republican National Convention, but he says he still supports the candidate.
Listen, all you got to do is go to one of my town meetings. I don't know whether these are people that are Republicans think I'm not backing Trump, or it's Democrats that want to get me on the trackers' records, but I'm asked at almost every town meeting, am I supporting Trump? And, of course, I announced that a couple months ago.
Okay, Grassley, that was before the latest comment by Donald Trump. No reason to believe, at least an issue, no issue from the Grassley statement, Grassley office, that anything has changed there, even though that was recorded before Trump's latest controversial comment. So, Rachel, tell us, what determines whether a congressional member of Congress is supporting Trump or not? Is there a way? Is it the more vulnerable Republicans are backing away?
Well,
in certain cases?
Yeah, I think that if you look at the list of people who seem to be most closely tied to the Never Trump movement, those who are most outspoken in their criticism of Donald Trump, and then those who are on the trail right now supporting Donald Trump either full-throatedly or in a more reserved way, I think what you see is that there's a clear differentiation between those who really need Republican base voters this fall and those who are more distant from the electoral arena. So, for example, a former senator in New Hampshire, Politico reported last night, he's written a very passionate letter to New Hampshire's RNC members urging them to please invoke this clause in the RNC rules that would allow them to essentially just remove Trump from the ticket and replace him, which is a pretty drastic move at this point and unlikely
and
to happen.
Fairly unrealistic.
Right,
yeah.
But the key is, of course, he's a former senator. Nothing
to lose.
Yeah, he doesn't need those Republican voters in November to come out to the polls and be enthusiastic voters for his, you know, his reelection campaign. And then you have people like Chuck Grassley. He does need Republican voters to come out in November and to be enthusiastic about voting for Republicans up and down the ticket. And so his electoral fortunes are really tied to the electoral fortunes of Donald Trump, whether he likes it or not.
Mm-hmm. So we don't see Chuck Grassley as vulnerable against Patty Judge this time around?
Well, polls right now seem to indicate that he's doing okay in the polls, whether or not that continues. He has some points of weakness. There's no doubt about that. And he particularly has some points of weakness as polls go down a little bit when you look at those who are most reliable voters, those who say they will definitely turn out to vote in November. If you just look at those voters, he's leading Patty Judge right now by 1%, which is easily within the margin of error. But I think, you know, he has a vested interest in convincing Republican voters to go out and vote for Donald Trump, because while they're at the polls, they will also vote for Chuck Grassley.
Okay, we're asking that question this hour, whether that is in fact true. You River to River listeners, has Donald Trump's candidacy influenced which party you'll vote for in Iowa's congressional races? Republicans, if you're voting for Donald Trump, will you be going straight down the line? And does Trump's candidacy change anything for you as you look at that ballot? You go into the voting booth on November 8th. 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Justin Holmes, let's mention some of the other Republican congressmen in Iowa up for reelection. Where do they sit? What are their concerns? Steve King in the 4th District, considered fairly safe for him. He's endorsed Donald Trump.
Yes, he has. And you know, the 4th District has such a Republican tilt to it that I'm not sure that there's much of anything that could really happen that is going to be a problem for King, in all honesty. You know, that's a very, very safely drawn district. You know, on the other hand, we've heard less, you know, on this from, say, Rod Blum, because the 1st is, you know, pretty competitive district, and frankly tilts a little Democratic in normal years. So, you know, he's already been on a list that's pretty vulnerable as far as incumbents go. And, you know, in a presidential year, especially if there's kind of heightened Democratic turnout and depressed Republican turnout, I think he's got a lot of problems, but he also doesn't want to sort of incite you know, anything that would make him too controversial, I think.
Mm-hmm. What about the 3rd District? That's where you are, Rachel. Mm-hmm. David Young defending his seat in November. Is he? How is he, think, seeing Donald Trump? Has he endorsed Donald Trump?
To be perfectly honest, I don't know that he has endorsed Donald Trump. Again, this is a very moderate district. If anything, it may tilt Democratic, particularly given turnout this coming November. So, you know, he's definitely on a list of vulnerable incumbents, and this is going to be this is going to be a big race for him, particularly because he's new, and your first time, you know, your first reelection campaign is always a little, you know, you're a little bit more insecure than you are after you've done it 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 times.
One phrase I saw in analysis of this, the position some Republicans are in, is the phrase Republican roulette.
Yes.
So some just have to sort of spin the barrel of the. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
We get the reference, right?
Yeah.
Okay. An email from Leslie, one of our listeners. She emailed us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. On the one hand, writes Leslie, supporters of Donald Trump say they like him because he says what he means, unlike other candidates. Yet when he says he wants to hit people, that a woman is evil, that has blood flowing out of her wherever, or hints that Second Amendment advocates could take care of Hillary Clinton, they switch to, he didn't really mean that. How long can they live with this cognitive dissonance? Justin Holmes, this is something we've seen repeated again and again, right?
Yeah, for supporters, pretty much forever. You know, people can actually deal with an awful lot of cognitive dissonance. But I agree with the email that this is a pretty slippery kind of argument. You know, that he says what he means until he doesn't, basically. And that's kind of that, you know, I'm just joking sort of construction as well. You know, that's a fairly common thing even in interpersonal relationships, to say something offensive and then, you know, walk it back that way. So yeah, I think, you know, for his core supporters, you know, they're going to keep buying this. I don't think there's much of anything he can say at this point that would probably alienate, you know, a good chunk of the people backing him. On the other hand, with moderates, I don't think this plays very well. You know, I think the more of this that you see, whether or not he means any of it, it's largely, you know, sort of beneath what we expect of office holders and campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Arvin is joining us from Northwood. He dialed 1-866-780-9100. Arvin, welcome to our program. What is your view on this?
Yeah, I don't think Donald Trump is really a Republican in any way, shape, or form. And I won't vote for anybody that backs him. Mm-hmm. I think he's a crook.
Mm-hmm. Has your mind changed recently, or when did you come to the conclusion you just stated?
Just over a period of time.
Yeah. Okay. May I ask, where is your support going, Arvin? Are you a Republican or a conservative voter?
Well, I have been. I just kind of in the middle of the road, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll vote for Democrats if they go against Trump. So.
Okay.
And I'll vote for Republicans if they go against Trump.
Okay. Arvin from Northwood, thank you very much. Yeah. What is the likelihood of some sort of... there has been attempts, even this week, have there not, Rachel, to sort of erect an alternative to Trump in the conservative column?
Absolutely. So you still have a core group of Republicans who are searching for an alternative. Gary Johnson is really depending on that core group of conservatives, and he has been given much more time and attention by the mainstream media than most other third-party candidates mm-hmm. could even hope to dream for, right? I mean, like,
right.
So he's had a chance to speak to voters far more so than most third-party candidates do, and his numbers are increasing. There are some polls right now nationally that have him at about 10%. When you start looking at state-by-state matchups that include Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, the numbers shift. There's no doubt that there's a real potential that these third-party candidates could influence the outcome in some key battleground states. In addition, you have kind of a quirky situation now where you have a former CIA operative who has declared that he's going to run for president. He's running because he hates Trump.
Right.
And he's very outspoken about that. So, you know, for Republicans who are looking for alternatives, they are available.
Let me throw this in before the break to have you comment on this. Yesterday, a curious thing happened. Hillary Clinton's campaign responding now to criticism that she did not reject the support of Sadiq Mateen. This is the father of the Orlando shooter, Omar Mateen. It turns out the father of the Orlando shooter made headlines earlier this week when he was seen sitting in the crowd at a Clinton rally in Florida. This also, of all places, right behind, in the camera angle, behind Hillary Clinton. Justin Holmes, what did you make of this story? I mean, aren't campaign staff responsible for vetting who's in the audience, especially behind the candidate?
Yeah, I think that was a tremendous gaffe. I will say that You know, he's maybe not a high enough profile person. It's been a while since he's been on TV that it might not click right away. You might not, as a staffer, be looking for that kind of a person on the way in. But gosh, that just does seem to be a big problem. And I think probably the campaign should have done something, you know, almost immediately to distance themselves, you know, from his presence, to look like they're even tacitly, you know, endorsing him there.
Another problem for Hillary Clinton has been this week, the news that the parents of two Americans who died in the attack on the American consulate in Benghazi in Libya in 2012 have filed a suit against Hillary Clinton, the suit alleging that the former Secretary of State's private email server was responsible for their deaths. What do you make of this, Rachel Caulfield?
Well, so this is, I think, one of those situations where conservative activists really want to keep a narrative going about why this email server matters. And so even if these government investigations seem to indicate that Hillary Clinton did not do anything wrong, the more they can kind of create this narrative that Hillary Clinton is not just untrustworthy, but potentially criminally liable for some pretty horrendous terrorist attack, then that undermines, I think, the idea that Hillary Clinton is more experienced, more qualified, knows foreign policy, right? It cuts her campaign at one of the key strengths that her campaign has against Donald Trump. So this lawsuit was filed by a guy who founded two organizations, Judicial Watch and Freedom Watch. And the organizations, their job really is to file these kinds of lawsuits on, you know, overwhelmingly to advance conservative causes. And so, you know, whether or not the suit has merit, that's something obviously that the courts will have to decide. But, you know, again, this is something that has been investigated and investigated and investigated and investigated.
And you would agree that no proof to date that Clinton's private email had anything to do with these attacks?
No, there's no evidence to date to suggest a link between the private email server and the attacks in Benghazi.
Okay, we'll come back after a short break. Justin, we'll let you in. I want to see you when you get in there. But, Justin, there'll be plenty of time after the break. Justin Holmes of the University of Northern Iowa, Rachel Caulfield of Drake's Department of Political Science. It's Politics Wednesday, chewing over the latest in politics. With your input, your questions as well, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Find us on Facebook. When we come back, we'll also have a short conversation with IPR's Clay Masters. Clay Masters to be covering the Hillary Clinton rally that's going to be held in a couple of hours in Des Moines. We'll talk with him about the expectations for her speech, her rally this afternoon. Politics Wednesday, I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Back in just a moment. And we are back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday with Rachel Caulfield of Drake University, Justin Holmes of the University of Northern Iowa. And you, if you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, chewing over the latest on the political landscape, mostly presidential politics and the ripples that follow from this very unusual election cycle. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Still to come, we'll take a look at Donald Trump's economic plan, as he outlined earlier this week. Also, the fact that Hillary Clinton is outspending Trump in ads by a whopping sum, what effect that may have or is having on this election. But first of all, let's go to our own Clay Masters of Iowa Public Radio, Morning Edition host and reporter. He's at a campaign rally to be held shortly in Des Moines at Lincoln High School. Clay, hello.
Hey, Ben. How's it going?
It's going well. Now, I don't know. I know there's a lot of security involved in getting into a rally such as this. Are you inside the venue yet?
Yes, I'm already sitting in the gymnasium of Lincoln High School on the south side of Des Moines. And in case you were wondering, August time gymnasiums are still sweaty and humid.
All right. What is Hillary Clinton expected to talk about today in Des Moines?
Well, she just toured Ray Gun, which is that popular T-shirt store that's based in Des Moines that's expanded. I know there's one in Iowa City and Kansas City. She's talking about small businesses, and she's expected to discuss her plan to create an economy, her campaign says, that works for everyone, not just those at the top, including passing the largest investment in job creation since World War II. Of course, we'll all be waiting also to hear if she addresses the comments made by her Republican rival Donald Trump. I'm sure you guys have been talking about this already in the first half, those comments he made about the Second Amendment people yesterday.
Indeed we have. Now, Clay, you've covered both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump rallies here in Iowa. Can you give us a sense of how they compare in terms of the atmosphere, the feeling, the type of people who show up, and the people's attitudes?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the first trip that Clinton has made to Iowa since she secured the Democratic nomination. It's also the first trip she's made here, obviously, since the caucuses, and she barely won the Iowa caucuses back in February. She was in Omaha a couple of weeks ago, which media market bleeds into Western Iowa, and she had the benefit of being on stage with the so-called Oracle of Omaha, Warren Buffett, of course, who has endorsed her. But this is in a high school gymnasium. Trump has had three different events. The two that I have covered have been in Cedar Rapids and Des Moines. Those have been in convention hall-type settings. This is very much the crowd, the gymnasium bleachers and circle where Clinton is going to speak. Of course, she's speaking at a school, so she's talking about jobs. It obviously gives a subconscious message of education that she talks about a lot in her speeches as well.
Okay, Clay, we'll let you go and cover that, I think, planned start at 1:45 at Lincoln High School in Des Moines. Thanks for giving us a live update. We'll listen for your report, I guess, today, this afternoon, on All Things Considered. Thanks, Clay.
Stay cool, Ben. Thanks.
All right. You too, in that sweaty gymnasium in Des Moines. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to our phones, Justin and Rachel. Elizabeth calling from Des Moines. Yes, indeed. We were talking about the so-called down-ticket effect of Donald Trump and whether his candidacy is influencing the party you will vote for in Iowa's congressional races. Elizabeth, is that what you're calling about?
Yeah, I guess I wanted to clarify that I am an independent, and I have voted for people on both sides of the ticket, so Republican and Democrat. And I've voted for Senator Grassley in the past. This year I will not be voting for him. One of the reasons is because of his support for Donald Trump. I feel that these Republicans who are throwing their support behind him are choosing party over country and not recognizing what a terrible position that would put us in if he actually wins the presidency. So Senator Grassley won't be getting my support, and I'm really disappointed in Paul Ryan, who, you know, as an Iowan, I don't have any effect on voting for him or not, but I always felt that he was a man of good conscience and a moderate, and for him to show support for Donald Trump is really disappointing to me.
Okay, Elizabeth in Des Moines, thank you for your viewpoint. Let's move to Mark in Cambridge. I don't know where Cambridge is, Mark. Where are you?
Cambridge is just right in between Ankeny and Ames, Iowa. It's just if you've heard of Huxley,
yep.
Then we're just east of Huxley, about 3 miles.
Very good. Glad to have you on from Cambridge. What's your view on this?
Well, you know, I've been a lifelong Republican. You know, tongue in cheek, I've kind of always said in jest, you know, when I don't know what to do, I always tell myself, I go back to my main rule, and that would be a bad Republican is always better than a good Democrat. Well, I don't know that I can do that this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump. I believe that he is a real charlatan, and we are just buying into a lie. I remember back in the early 70s when Paul Harvey was still on the radio, he made a statement once that said this: deception always travels with rationalization. And I believe a lot of us are just rationalizing why we should support Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Mark,
and
you have a lot of other callers. Let me ask you quickly, will it affect how you vote in the Senate and congressional races in your district? I guess you must be in the 3rd district, huh?
Yes. You know what? To some extent, it will. Yeah, I am a little disappointed that at the people down the line and the down parties that are behind him. And I'm just waiting and wishing and hoping for people to stand up and say, you know what, I don't care what the repercussions is, I can't support this guy. So, yeah, it will have some effect on it.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Dialing in from Cambridge, 1-866-780-9100. Rachel Caulfield, a couple of opinions there. One an independent, another a Republican there. We're seeing definitely a Trump effect on the down ticket.
Yeah, this is exactly what the Republican Party does not want to hear.
right.
They, you know, during the convention, I think there was a very legitimate and honest hope that they could unify the party and bring together the themes and the policies that they have been championing, obviously, for years, and kind of find a way to make peace with Donald Trump, particularly because, you know, when you look back at the primary, the thing that Donald Trump did exceptionally well in the primary was he brought a bunch of non-Republicans to the table, and oftentimes non-voters, people who had not been involved in the political process, who did not count themselves as loyal Republicans, but they really liked what Donald Trump offered. And so they came out to the polls and they supported him. And I think there was a hope, particularly coming out of the convention, that some of those people would continue to stay with the Republican Party and that energy would be incorporated into the more mainstream Republican Party. And that simply has not come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we want to touch earlier this week on another downside for Donald Trump in this week's political news. And his effort to appeal to establishment Republicans, 50 senior GOP national security officials warning in an open letter that Trump would, quote, risk our country's national security and well-being. These are people of significance, all working in Republican administrations prior to this, with many serving as top aides to President George W. Bush. They all said none of them would be voting for Trump. In their letter, Trump lacks the character, values, and experience to be president. He weakens U.S. moral authority as leader of the free world, appears to lack basic knowledge about and belief in the U.S. Constitution, U.S. laws, and U.S. institutions, including religious tolerance, freedom of the press, and an independent judiciary. Justin, let me put this to you, because Republicans have potentially a real opportunity here to criticize national security under Hillary Clinton as a Secretary of State, do they not? The rise of the Islamic State, Syria, instability in Libya following that U.S.-backed intervention, which she supported. And now we have 50 big names in the Republican Party against Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think that really does undercut some of his argument. You know, Clinton certainly has some bona fides in terms of experience, but of course she does have some weakness on foreign policy as well. But when you have someone who really has no experience there and his own party's experts are dismissing, that's going to be, again, potentially a pretty large problem. For the diehard Trump supporters, no. It's pretty easy to rationalize that away as, you know, oh, this is sour grapes, or, you know, that's the establishment and we don't like the establishment. You know, but for people who are a little less on board or who are independents or leaners or things like that, you know, when you're condemned by your own party and kind of experts with your own party, that has to sting.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to our phones, 1-866-780-9100. Our hour quickly coming to an end, but we want to get some more voices from our listeners in there. Nathan is with us from Des Moines. Nathan, I see on my screen you're a supporter of Donald Trump.
Yes, sir. I just believe that the fact that both the parties are going against Trump,
mm-hmm.
that right there is enough to show me that they're actually, you know, not so different as we think, that everybody doesn't want Trump because he's going to let everybody know the truth.
Mm-hmm. And what is the truth you see as portrayed by Donald Trump?
Well, I think he's just going to bring things to light that most Americans don't know or have forgotten.
For instance?
Things like, say, Federal Reserve, how they operate. Things like
So is there anything that could sway you, and we've talked with several conservative voters who won't be supporting Trump this hour. Nathan, you appear to be solidly behind Donald Trump. Is there anything he could say or do that would dissuade you from supporting him in November?
Oh, no, not really. I mean, he does speak his mind maybe too much at times. He doesn't hold anything back. But that's all right. That's freedom of speech.
What do you think about his latest comment about the Second Amendment people yesterday?
I don't think it doesn't concern me at all that he's not threatening anybody with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Nathan.
Yep.
Okay, Nathan in Des Moines, thank you very much for your view. 1-866-780-9100. Well, all but obliterated in the media coverage by Trump's controversial remarks were his economic policy remarks. These he made on Monday. Trump proposed sweeping tax breaks, cuts to federal regulations, and a revival of the stalled Keystone XL pipeline. Remember that. Well, here he is unveiling his plans for the economy this week. A little bit of it. His campaign describes it as winning the global competition, focusing heavily on changes in the tax code, also winnowing down the tax brackets from 7 to 3, as well as limiting taxes in all forms of business income to 15%, ending the estate tax and excluding child care expenses from taxation. Here's a bit of Donald Trump.
When we were governed by the America First policy, Detroit was absolutely booming. Engineers, builders, laborers, shippers, and countless others went to work each day, provided for their families, and lived out the American dream. But for many living in this city, that dream has long ago vanished. When we abandoned the policy of America First, we started rebuilding other countries instead of our own. The skyscrapers went up in Beijing and many other cities around the world, while the factories and neighborhoods crumbled right here in Detroit. Okay. Our roads and bridges fell into disrepair, yet we found the money to resettle millions of refugees at taxpayer expense.
Okay, Donald Trump, a little bit of his unveiling of his plans for the economy this week, Monday in Detroit. Rachel Caulfield, when we compare the economic plans of Trump versus Clinton, where do the visions differ?
Well, in a lot of ways. I think, you know, right now it's kind of hard to say exactly what the details of Donald Trump's plan are. And you'll note throughout the speech, he added several times, you know, we'll release more details in the coming weeks. We'll release more details. But clearly this is a, you know, the broad contours of it are to reduce taxes and simplify the tax structure, to renegotiate trade agreements, and, you know, eliminate particularly regulation and taxes on small businesses and businesses in general. So, you know, one of the components of the plan would limit all business taxes to 15%. And right now they're at about 35%. So this is a significant shift. But the idea is, of course, that would generate it would generate a lot of incentives for businesses to grow and to invest in creating new jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton, of course, immediately responded and said, you know, this is the same kind of trickle-down economics that we've seen in the past. Clinton's plan, there are a lot of moving parts to Clinton's plan. Clinton, you know, in some ways on the campaign trail, if you've seen her speak and paid attention to some of her, you know, the way she's outlining her plans, she's been involved in these conversations for a long time, and you can kind of tell because there are so many nuances to the things that she's talking about. And these nuances, although they may be very clear to the policy wonks, they're not entirely clear to the average American voter.
She's perhaps too far into the weeds for her rally.
Exactly. For the rally setting.
Yeah, right. You see that also, Justin?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, where Trump has, I think, an advantage here is that often the public really doesn't pay a lot of attention to policy details. And, you know, he in that clip there, he's telling a pretty good story. It's mostly inaccurate. It's profoundly inaccurate for the most part. You know, we're just not spending anywhere near that much money on rebuilding other countries or, you know, things like that. And gosh, there was a 75% tax bracket at one point. So, you know, it's a story that it doesn't make a lot of sense with reality, but it's believable to a lot of people. And, you know, it's this strong, forceful kind of language. Whereas, yeah, if you start detailing, you know, a bunch of economics proposals, it's going to put people to sleep, is kind of the concern.
Okay, we have just a few minutes left. One more point I wanted to get to before we end this hour with you, Justin Holmes and Rachel Caulfield. The ad war, not much of a war. It's a one-sided war.
It's a war, Trump isn't showing up.
Yeah, or he's got a big white flag.
That's right.
Since the primary season ended, nearly $100 million has been spent on general election TV advertisements in the presidential race, but Donald Trump's campaign hasn't spent a single cent on any of it. Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign now spending $52 million on ads. Pro-Clinton outside groups chipped in an additional $39 million. So by comparison, once again, the Trump campaign itself spending zero, with pro-Trump outside groups adding $8 million over the airwaves. That's $91 million for the Trump, for the Clinton team versus $8 million for the team Trump, let's call it that. Let's listen to one of the Clinton ads. Probably heard them. There's been over $13 million spent in ad campaigns during the Olympic coverage. One of the ads, including a clip of former late show host David Letterman. Here he is. That's all the ad is. It's David Letterman quizzing Donald Trump on where his clothing line products are manufactured.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
As a line of clothing. Now, where were these made?
These were made, I don't know where they were made, but they were made someplace. But they're great. It's ties, shirts, cufflinks, everything sold at Macy's, and they're doing great.
Where are the shirts made?
Bangladesh.
Bangladesh.
Well, it's good. We employ people in Bangladesh.
Ties? Where are the ties
they
made?
Have to work
these are
too.
Beautiful ties.
They are great ties.
The ties are made in where? China?
China.
Ties are made in China.
Okay, there you have a little bit of that. That's all the ad is. The fact that so much is being spent on ads by the Clinton campaign and nothing by the does Donald Trump think he's playing by different rules here, Justin Holmes?
I think he does. And, you know, to some extent, it's not a ridiculous idea. I think to spend no dollars is not a very good strategy. But, you know, getting eyeballs to TV is kind of a more tricky thing than it used to be, although he's missing a giant opportunity by not advertising during the Olympics. And he managed to win the nomination with almost no advertising as well. You know, he's got this strategy where he's the best candidate I've ever seen at generating free press. That said, you know, I think at some point reality is going to set in here where, you know, we get back to kind of a normal race. And, you know, being just absolutely skunked on advertising dollars is going to be a problem for him. There's only so much time people are going to be spending watching him, listening to him, et cetera. And you need some of that sort of, you know, surreptitious exposure through television, Internet, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. We have just a minute left. Rachel Caulfield, can the Trump campaign remain viable without any ads continuing this?
Well, it has remained viable this long. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at where this race began and both the quality of competition that Trump faced in the primary campaign, the huge amounts of money that were available to his opponents, and now during this general election phase of the campaign, I mean, if you look at national polls, okay, right now Hillary Clinton seems to be up a little bit, but on the whole, the sheer difference in money spent, I think it's fair to say that the Trump campaign is scrappy. Like, they're getting it done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, they're actually doing a great job for the minuscule amount of money that they have put into traditional advertising. And so this is going to be something that we watch. We may flip conventional wisdom on its head this year entirely.
Okay, something like, I don't know, in the neighborhood of 90 days before the general election. Rachel Caulfield, thank you for your observations this hour, associate professor in Drake's Department of Political Science. Justin Holmes, assistant professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Justin, Rachel, great to have you on this hour. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good talking with you.
River to River, produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, with help from Graham Bly. Also help from Tony Daner today and John Pemble. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River, a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.